This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
9 o'clock hour here. Sean and RJ 105 through the fan. Peyton was fist bump before the segment even started. I mean, he was in the back.
Man,
fist
that's
pumping ready, away, baby.
I'm ready.
I would have never guessed he would have been so on top of it on a Thursday after 6:40 where Sean is out.
Yeah.
I'm impressed.
That's the last, you know, 2.5 hours of the show, that's mail it in time for him.
It is.
These last 2 days have been mail it in time for me.
I know.
You don't know.
Yes. You know how I know? Because Daniel Jones is on the cut sheet.
You sent a Daniel Jones clip.
I sent a Chase Daniel clip.
Oh, that's like I got confused.
Different people, Peyton. Different people.
Boy, when I looked at the cut sheet, I was like, wow, Daniel Jones called the Cowboys a laughingstock?
I know. I was like,
that's a hot take there, Daniel.
I was scanning and I was just looking like, where in the world is that cut? I guess, did we send Chase Daniel? He's like, oh, I thought that was Daniel Jones.
That was Daniel Jones.
Okay.
Oh, man. No, I knew it was him. I just labeled it wrong.
Well,
okay, sure.
Chase Daniel might think that they truly are a laughing stock, and they truly might be. And we played that cut for you earlier, the Chase Daniel laughing stock one. But after this story, Bobby, I'm not sure I can refute much of what he is saying.
Yeah, this is tough news to get. So we were sitting there wondering, what in the world did the Cowboys see in this Jonathan Mingo trade? Why were they so comfortable making this deal when it feels like universally everybody's saying they paid too much? And we've said to ourselves, well, maybe they feel like they didn't, that they felt like this was good value. Nope. As it turns out, the Cowboys knew they were probably giving up a little bit too much in return for Jonathan Mingo, but they were happy to do so because of the controllable years. This is from the weekly Jeremy Fowler, Dan Graziano back and forth on ESPN, where they talk about different issues, subjects around the league.
Right.
Jeremy Fowler writes, Carolina getting a fourth rounder from Dallas in exchange for Jonathan Mingo was a shocker. Former day two picks who are out of the lineup typically don't garner that. The Panthers were eager to deal him. Yes, contractual control was a factor in his value. Mingo is in his second year of his rookie deal, meaning Dallas has him under contract for the next 2.5 seasons for slightly more than $4 million total. The Cowboys felt they had to pay a premium for that, and Mingo does have some upside. But Carolina didn't have much leverage here. On a day that mostly followed a well-worn script, this move was off script. Dan Graziano adds, yep, Dallas wasn't going to trade players and wasn't going to make a move for a rental. The Cowboys liked Mingo when he came out in the 2023 draft, where he was the number 39 pick, and they felt they needed some size in their wide receiver core. Having Mingo under contract for 2 more years after the season justifies the price in their eyes. Basically, they didn't think they'd get anyone they liked better with that fourth round pick. Obviously, a lot there that basically just says, yeah, everybody agrees Dallas probably overpaid. But the issue here is that Dallas essentially acknowledging that they overpaid when it says the Cowboys felt they had to pay a premium for that control, and Mingo does have some upside. That's a problem, isn't it, Chop? Like, is that
a major, major problem? Like, I get it. You understand. Like, all right, yeah, I got to pay. I understand. I've got to pay for something.
Sure.
I understand. I even have to pay perhaps a surcharge on something because it's trade deadline day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the reality of it. You're up against it. You either get him or you don't. Like, do you want to improve your team or not?
Yeah.
From Carolina's perspective, it's like, okay, the guy's under contract for a couple of years. I mean, fine. We can just trade him in the offseason. We don't have to trade him today. Cowboys had to get him that day if they wanted to get him. So I get it. You're going to have to pay the premium on that. But like the Cowboys are making the assumption that he is the same player he was when he came out of college and that their scouting was right.
Right. And that's, he's already shown some of what that looks like.
And generally, regardless of the quarterback that you're playing with, receivers at least can show you something in the league, even if they're on a bad team. You've seen enough receivers have good years on bad teams.
Yeah, I mean, the advanced metrics, the basic counting numbers, as some would call them, Chop, as well. All of that is, Mingo is down near the bottom of the league in terms of how efficient he is.
Yeah.
And so we're talking about a guy that, even if you want to say, well, look, it's Carolina. Okay. Carolina, though, he was the worst of their receivers. Everybody else played better. He was replaced by an undrafted free agent this year, an undrafted free agent rookie. And the issue is, you talk about, look at the fact that, all right, you had a couple years of control, so you gotta pay a premium for that, Chop. You know, that's what you have to do. All right, well, let's take a look at Justin Fields. Let's take a look at Mac Jones, former Pro Bowlers, right? Mac Jones, a quarterback with 2 years of control left, was traded for a sixth. Justin Fields, a quarterback with 2 years of control left, was traded for a conditional sixth. And you said, we will go two rounds higher on a pick that's likely. You said earlier, or a couple hours ago, that you think Dallas is probably around 7-10 right now if Dak doesn't play the rest of the year, which is a possibility. We've talked about it this morning. If that's the case, you gave up a high fourth for a receiver that nobody seemed to want. That's a big problem for me.
It is a big problem.
Does it make you question at all what you can trust them to do? Does the last 9 months basically do this? Because I think they've always been viewed as good team builders who some of the peripheral stuff or other factors have gotten into play as to why they failed. It's not been the fact that they can't put good rosters together. Are you at a point, given this offseason and now given a trade like this and a trade like the Trey Lance trade, where you say, I now have questions about their ability to build a good roster?
I don't know if I have questions about it. I don't know if I have questions about it, but like, look at this. I mean, I'll tell you this. I think their philosophy on team building, I just disagree with. But they could still build a good roster. They've shown over the last 20 years they could build a good roster. You just forget.
Which is why, sure, you don't forget. But do you start questioning, has
the magic
and the way to build these rosters, have you evolved with the rest of the league?
Oh, we could spend all day on how I think the Cowboys have not evolved with the rest of the league and a lot of things. But, I mean, just take a look at this. So they don't have a fourth round pick anymore, right?
Nope.
So they have six picks total this year in this year's draft.
And they will get a lot more than that because they let all their depth go. So they are in line to get several comp picks.
It's a sexy pick.
And that still will be for this year. They don't know.
They won't know what they are yet, but yeah, they'll be getting them for 2025.
And then they'll get them around the start of the league year.
Yes.
All right. Right now, the Cleveland Browns have 9 picks in this year's draft. And they're probably going to get comp picks too.
Mm-hmm.
The Eagles have 7 picks in the first 5 rounds. And I assume they're going to get at least another, a fourth for comp somewhere?
Yeah.
Right? Most teams get a comp pick somewhere along the line.
Oh, by the way, important to note, when we talked about, we didn't even note this yesterday, when Washington made that third round pick trade for Lattimore the other day, They had 2/3. One of them they acquired from the Eagles, which was a pick the Eagles had acquired from someone. I don't remember who. But that pick they managed to flip was the one that was right now like 18 spots lower than the other third rounder. So they traded their far worse third round pick in that trade for Lattimore.
Wow. Now, I think the Cowboys generally put a good roster on the field. I think this year, I think that they had a reset and they wouldn't admit they had a reset, and that was a fault of theirs. You've got to be able to take a step back, do an autopsy of your team, an audit, whatever you want to call it, and figure out, all right, can we compete this year? If the answer was no, that they couldn't have competed this, and they truthfully looked in the mirror and said, yeah, we're not going to be that good, then they should have taken steps to tear it down a little bit more. Not to be 7-10, to be 4-13
yep.
or whatever, and then gotten a much better pick. That's what they should have done. Philosophically, they don't believe in it.
One of the players that they added in August as sort of a scramble drill where they gave up draft capital again was Jordan Phillips, who pretty quickly here, they said, man, you look kind of washed. You must be hurt. Let's throw you on IR, something that Jordan Phillips disputed and said, I didn't need to go on IR. He came back, played a very little bit, and then was released this week. He ended back up with the Buffalo Bills. He had a funny quote yesterday that went viral, but there was something in the back half of this quote after the laughs that makes you stop and think, go, okay, is Dallas doing everything the way they're supposed to?
Most because I'm a quiet taste, and they like my taste. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, seeing the smiles and being actually wanted is, it's a hell of a drug. You know what I mean? You can do a lot for people when it's in the right environment.
That sounds, now the first part of that is great quote. I'm an acquired taste and they like my taste here in Buffalo. That's pretty good.
That's one in a million.
But I'm acquired taste.
The back end of that where he says, seeing the smiles and being actually wanted, it's a hell of a drug. You can do a lot for people when it's the right environment. And for a team that's had questions come up recently about, you know, the practice facility tours and some of the issues that they feel like are distracting here, or maybe the culture isn't right. How often did we hear culture mentioned over the last 2 years whenever things went sideways? And so for Jordan Phillips, he's basically telling you, yeah, things will look pretty different when you get in the right environment, which sounds like a juxtaposition of that's not Dallas. Dallas isn't the right environment. Is that as damning as it sounds to me, or do you think that's, am I overselling?
Well, it's an oversell a little bit, but it is damning. I mean, you don't want to be called the wrong environment. Like, this team has never had a culture problem. Not recently, have they?
I mean, only recently in terms of, if you want to talk about the last decade, no. The last year or two, people have started asking questions. Do you have the right work habits? Do you have the right culture?
That was one thing you could say a lot about Jason. They never quit on him. They always seemed to have a good culture. You know, it was looking at day to day. And I think Mike's done a good job too with it. For the most part, every coach is their own strength. I think he's a better coach maybe than Jason, but Jason was better at doing certain things within the organization. Maybe culture-wise is one of them.
A couple thoughts here on the Franklin Frankel Injury Attorneys fan text, 877-881-1053, 877-881-1053. 214, everyone that leaves here says the same crap about the environment for the Cowboys now. 214, can't trust the Cowboys to build a good roster since they started prioritizing spring break over the start of free agency. Good to hear from you, Mike Bassick. And then we've got here 940. I think this is an important discussion to potentially have. Do we call it good roster building just because they win 12 games?
Yeah,
usually good rosters can win, or can at least win a playoff game. I will say this, 940. I do think winning 12 games 3 years in a row does mean you've got a good roster.
Right.
And to be fair, they absolutely fell apart against Green Bay. It was unacceptable, inexcusable, but they did win a playoff game in both of the, didn't they? They lost the first year to San Francisco, but they won the playoff game on the road in Tampa, first one in 30 years.
Well,
They clearly had a good roster.
Well, look, also, like, you could say when you win 12 games 3 years in a row, that's a good roster. I agree. I also think that if you were to win, let's say you went 9-8 and then you win 2 playoff games, am I supposed to say that's a good roster now?
Right.
So
is that sustainable?
Right, because I don't think that that's necessarily, necessarily the sign of a good roster because you win some playoff games. But, look, the Cowboys do not have a high ground anywhere. They don't have a high ground to sit on.
You know, and
they don't win.
It's funny. Somebody asked us the other day on Love the Star the question of, do you think this is the most the Joneses in the front office have felt the heat from the fans and media? And it was a little puzzling to me because I was like, I don't think this is the most the heat has been turned up on them in their time here. Like, I think there have definitely been times where, for off-the-field stuff or performance or whatever else, they're getting a lot of scrutiny from fans and media and everything else. I do think, though, that it does appear to be the time they've felt it the most.
Yeah, I mean, look, they've definitely felt it.
They hear it. They hear it, and they're taking notice of it.
They do hear it. And also, the last time this team was really, really, not good, like genuinely not a good team, there were two times. One, you had your three straight 8-8 seasons, because the other ones they had, their quarterback was hurt. Twitter was in its infancy in 2010, 2011, right? It was not what it is today. And then the prior time, in 2000, you know, 1, 2, and 3, or 2001 and 2002. I mean, you didn't have any social media. I mean, MySpace wasn't even a thing.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Look at the Chuba Hubbard.
No, I'm looking at some news for the University of Texas.
All right.
Well, we can tee it back up on the other side of the break. There's some breaking Texas news.
And there's some breaking NFL running back news as well to get to, along with our new Dallas Cowboys insider, Tommy Yarish. That is all coming up next year on 105 Through the Fan. Crosstalk with the KNC Masterpiece coming up in 20 minutes. They're here today. They are at the Buffalo Wild Wings off Hewlin in Fort Worth tomorrow for Football Friday. We are about to be joined by Tommy Yarish at DallasCowboys.com, our new insider from DallasCowboys.com.
We're brand spanking new over there. I just hosted Cowboys Crosstalk with him a couple weeks ago.
Well, look at you. We're going to get to know him in a second. We have a little bit of breaking news, Robert Montgomery Belt. The Carolina Panthers have come to terms with Chuba Hubbard on a 4-year, $33.2 million extension.
Boy, I think I'm going to need to go back and check. I think a few weeks ago when we talked about Chuba, I think I said $8 million. And Zach Wolchek texted me and was like, no way Chuba gets it. I'm going to have to go back and listen.
No way he gets that? He's a good player.
He didn't think he'd get it, though.
Well, he gets a max value of $37.2 million. I guess that it means that let's talk about what he has currently. Is that when it says a max value?
Yeah.
With $15 million in new fully guaranteed money on that deal. That's according to Ian Rappaport.
Well, there you go. That's some breaking news for now that they've cleared out.
I wanted the Cowboys to get him.
They cleared out the Jonathan Mingo money so they could get the payment there. Yep. We're going to bring on Tommy Yarish from DallasCowboys.com as I give the second piece of breaking news we teased, because this is relevant to Tommy, who is a University of Texas grad and followed along with the football team for a while. The breaking news from Mike Roach over at 24/7 Sports. Sources tell 24/7 Sports that Jonte Cook, the 5-star DeSoto product from 2 classes ago, I think it was, he is on his way out of Austin. He's entering the transfer portal and heading out of town. Stacked room, but still, the Jonte Cook time is over. In Austin, Tommy, before we talk Cowboys, your initial reaction to the departure of Jonte Cook?
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me. Yeah, you know, it certainly stinks to see. Jonte is a really talented wide receiver. You know, and the thing with Texas over the last couple of years is that the wide receiver room has just been littered with a lot of talent. And, you know, sometimes guys can't find a way into the rotation. He's a very talented player. You know, you don't just become a 5-star for no reason. So best of luck to him wherever he goes. I think he's going to be very successful in his next endeavor.
Tommy, we haven't had you on the show yet. So give us your life story in 25 words or less.
Born and raised in Chicago, moved to Houston for high school, to the University of Texas for college, and really happy to be here in Dallas covering the Cowboys.
Look at him. So
he might have
polished.
Actually nailed the 25 words.
Look at that. Polished. He took your instructions to a T. Look at that. See, this is what Nick Eatman was talking about.
Most people do that, and they say, and I'm like, well, that's two
words.
That's
two. You're done right there.
Here, man. Yeah. Hey, good job.
Exactly. So nailed it.
Careful.
Exactly. All right, Tommy, so as we look at this Cowboys injury report yesterday, obviously CeeDee Lamb, limited participant. That's encouraging. Micah Parsons, limited. Looks like Micah said that he feels like he's confident that he's going to have a shot to play this weekend. We're still waiting on, it looks like, Deron Bland, who is puzzling, like just not been available since what they thought was going to be about a 5-week injury. It's kind of lingered now into November. Which guys do you feel confident here as we head into this big Thursday practice? Which guys do you feel confident will be available on Sunday? And which guys will today be a big test for to see if they're going to be ready to go?
I think the most confident guy that I'm confident will play on Sunday is Micah. I think him getting back out there in a limited capacity was a great sign. Hopefully I think the plan is to try and ramp him up, because he said yesterday in the media availability that, you know, when he's back playing, he's back playing. It's no, there's no ramp up process in the game. There's no, you know, maybe take a week to get a couple of snaps in and, you know, you get the growing pains of coming back from an injury. He's going to be full go when he comes back. So I think him being limited in practice yesterday was a great sign. You know, not too worried about Eric Kendricks and Zach Martin. I think those are just, you know, more rest days than anything else. So I think they'll be good to go. And then, yeah, I mean, Deron Bland, you know, a couple weeks ago, Steven mentioned with you guys that he had suffered a setback of some sort. And, you know, DNP yesterday is not a great sign, I don't think. So I think his participation today is going to be a big one that I'm looking for. But across the board, I think there were, you know, CD, I think he'll be good to go. Jerry said that he's probably going to be good to go with you guys the other day as well. So looking more at Deron Bland today. And then, of course, you want to see Micah Parsons, you know, if he's full today and he's not limited, I think that's your telltale sign. But I wouldn't be surprised if he's limited today and then maybe trying to get him full on Friday or Saturday.
Tommy Yarsh, DallasCowboys.com, brought to you by the Winstar World Casino Resort. Proud to be the casino that Dallas Cowboys. Please game responsibly. When are they going to decide on a and what is the process with the decision on whether Dak gets surgery or not? Is it like how much of that is like, hey, the team decision versus his decision? I mean, how does that whole thing work?
I think right now it's more of a process of getting opinions and seeing what all the options are on the table. This has to be, you know, a decision that's kind of made hand in hand. I think Dak's got the, you know, the leverage because it's his calf. but, you know, you really want to, I think, in this process, think about, you know, what's best for Dak long term. Obviously, this is something that you want to heal fully. You know, you don't want to risk any further injury that would keep him out, say, if he, you know, comes back after 4 weeks, but he's still not 100% and there's a high chance of him injuring it worse than it's already been. And I think that's why you didn't see him return, obviously, on Sunday. But, you know, right now I think it's more of a process of getting more than one opinion, seeing what options are on the table, and then going from there. I think that's why we're seeing the hold off on IR.
Tommy, what do you think is the reason that Dallas is hesitant, it seems like, or has decided to go with Cooper Rush? I guess it may not be hesitancy with Trey Lance, but why do you think they seem so dissuaded from putting Lance in this moment, given that they gave up a fourth round pick for him a year ago and he's been here in the building now for quite a bit of time?
I think it's more because Cooper Rush has won this team games in the past. Now, granted, I understand that this team is very different from 2022. I listened to Babe a couple of minutes ago when he was on with you guys, and I think he made some good points. You know, that defense in 2022 was holding the offense to, you know, less than 20 points every game and taking the ball away, whereas this group, you know, hasn't been able to do that. But Cooper Rush is a veteran quarterback. He's been in this system long enough to where he can come in and win you games still, I think. I think he has all the abilities to win you games like he has done in the past, in his past five starts where he's won you four, or his past six starts, where he's won five. So I think that there's still confidence in the locker room in Cooper Rush, and that, you know, this team is still trying to win games. They're 3-5. It hasn't been the best start, but they're still trying to win games. They're still trying to push themselves into the playoff picture. They've still got, you know, seven division games left to play. So the season hasn't been thrown away completely yet. You know, I think that we'll see a little bit of Trey Lance here and there. I wouldn't be surprised at all if they brought him in situationally, but, you know, you got to understand that Trey Lance hasn't seen in-game regular season NFL snaps in quite a while, and he's trying to still, you know, he has been overcoming injuries throughout the course of his career, and when he's played, he's struggled a bit. So it takes time to, you know, come back into this offense and play at a high level. Cooper Rush has that advantage on him in terms of he's been here longer, but then again, you know, Trey Lance, like you mentioned, you traded a fourth round pick for him, and he's got the ability with his legs that can potentially change the game here for you. So I think we'll see a little bit of him. It's just in terms of how much over the next couple of weeks, and does it change depending on how games go?
You mentioned that we haven't, you know, Trey hasn't seen in-game snaps in a while, you know, over a year. I mean, shoot, like how many in-season practice snaps does he get in a week? I know you're not allowed to watch that much practice, but like, do we have any idea how many practice snaps he has seen this year?
The parts of practice that we get to watch, we don't get to see how many, you know, reps he gets in terms of he's got offensive line or he's thrown to receivers. Usually in the media portion of practice, they're kind of off to the side and, you know, they're throwing on the run and It'll be, you know, the usual pecking order is Dak Prescott, Cooper Rush, and then Trey Lance comes up, and, you know, they're just working on throws to certain spots and things like that. But, you know, Trey said to us yesterday that he's been working with the scout team this week and getting those kinds of snaps. I would assume he's getting all the backup snaps in practice too now, considering he is the backup quarterback. So this is going to be a big week for him in terms of getting more acclimated and up to speed in this offense, because now he's getting those valuable reps, and he's getting the an uptick in those reps, so that, you know, if for whatever reason he's called on to come into the game, he's going to be expected to be ready and understand what he needs to do.
Tommy Arsh from DallasCowboys.com joining us here on 105 Through the Fan. Okay, Tommy, so the Jonathan Mingo trade goes down this week. People are trying to figure out, okay, how much of this is about this season versus, you know, into the future, having 2 years of control after this year. How quickly do you think they're going to get him up to speed and get him ready and have him in there taking meaningful reps?
That's a great question. I think this week will be telling of that. You know, he was going through the onboarding process yesterday, so he didn't practice. As far as I know, Mike McCarthy said in his press conference that he hadn't even met Jonathan yet. So we'll see what happens today with that. But in terms of what that was for, I think it's a little bit of both this season versus next. The next 2 years, you mentioned he's got, you know, 2 years left on his rookie deal. So that's obviously big for Dallas in terms of, you know, they don't need to go get another receiver for, you know, 2 years if they don't want to from that aspect. But, you know, it's something that they liked him in the draft process, and they still think that those traits are there over the last 2 years. Obviously, things didn't work out in Carolina. Offensively, a lot of things aren't working out in Carolina. So, you know, it's a fresh start for him, and sometimes that's what players need, fresh starts. And I think Dallas is hoping that fresh start can propel him into a good spot. If he does play this week, I wouldn't expect him to get, you know, too many touches, since he's still kind of acclimating himself. And especially if today is his first day of practice, only have had 2-3 days of practice with the team. But I would assume, you know, he gets worked in a good bit, considering Brandon Cooks is still on IR, although things are looking up for him returning soon. But, you know, like you said, Bobby, I think it's a mix of a plan for this year and a plan for next as well.
Hey, Tommy, we appreciate it, man. Thanks for coming on.
Anytime, guys. Appreciate y'all.
Tommy Yarsh, DallasCowboys.com. It's an inaugural appearance.
Listen how polished he is. He hit the 25 words or less.
He's polished. He's
very measured.
He sounds 45.
He does. He's not. He's fresh out of school. I think he's younger than even Nick Harris is 24. I think he's a couple years younger than Nick. So he doesn't sound like that. He sounds more mature than I do. I think I'm 12 to 13 years older than him. So.
Wow. All right. Very good. Tommy Yarsh here, DallasCowboys.com. We have Crosstalk. KMC Masterpiece coming up next.
Mavs have a run going right now. And they extend it. A three-pointer right in the face of Giddy.
Oh, it's Mark Folliwell with the call. Mavs TV, Channel 29, 119, 1099 over the Chicago Bulls.
Ugh, we rained on their Giddy party.
It's not bad.
Never mind.
It's not bad.
Pretty good,
that's
right?
Not bad at all.
Yeah.
Mike?
There's layers to it.
Good morning, Corey.
What up?
Kevin?
Hey.
Looks pretty dreary outside.
It is.
Was it pretty nasty?
I love it.
But it's not really raining.
Yeah. It's supposed to rain, but it wasn't really raining on the way up, so it just looked cloudy, and people are all right.
What do we have coming up on the show?
Guys, at 11:20 today, the segment that you love, AM on the FM.
Oh yeah.
Favorite.
Peyton's favorite, too.
Very yeah, popular. That is Peyton's favorite.
Tied for my favorite producer-led segment on the station.
It's so popular, we do it twice.
LA Live.
LA Live.
Yeah. LA Live is very good. Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. It's a really that's good producer-led really segment. Very
okay, so.
And then we asked the question, did Jerry Jones set up Mike McCarthy to fail this year?
Baby.
Is it setting up to... I'm going to answer the question right now.
Or
I'm going to answer with a question.
Ooh.
Is it setting up to fail without blowing up your segment? Is it setting up to fail or is it... No.
Is it failing to set up?
No, you get no benefits. If I'm going to really judge you, I've had 4 years to judge you with everything put around you. Show me how much you can get out of this. Like that's part of my evaluation. You're not going to be handed every single thing over. Show me what you do with a little bit of stress.
So you're saying he was displeased with the last 4 years and thought he might make a change?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah.
I really hate those 36 wins over 3 years. We got to get out of this. We got to get out of this.
Do you know how many teams won 36 games in the last 3 years?
Funny. Somebody around the league had said to me, it was like when that was brought up, I'd say like, well, what? I mean, the idea of they've won 12 games in a row is how they keep reference to that. And somebody told me once, they're like, yeah, but there's a lot of people here who believe, like, around the league, you should have won like 14 games over the last 3 years. Like they were really good. They could have been better.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, is that 12 feels like a disappointment at times with them.
Yes.
I was thinking about doing, and Mike likes it today at 12:40-ish, instead of irritating Kevin about taking a load off, relaxing and laughing, I was thinking about doing almost a Jerry Jones. He's actually close to being good at managing a football team as a general manager. I think he's the greatest. I don't think there's much of an argument. He's the greatest of all time at owning a sports franchise.
Sure. He's way up there.
Yeah. I'm like, the thing is, because they have won 12 games on a consistent basis now. Obviously, they're not going to do that this year.
Still could.
But it's like, he does enough. He's not really bad at it. I guess maybe I've come across, I was like, I want to correct, like, he's not really bad at this, but he's not really good at it either. But he's like just good enough. Does that make sense?
I think it's different.
Yeah, he's fine.
So,
there's nothing wrong with him.
So, like, and this is the line that I keep telling people. Over the last 10 years, I think it's shifted to where his role as GM is, I'm consensus builder. Like, I've got 5 or 6 people in this circle of trust where we work through things, and I oversee those meetings, and I have a veto pen. I can overrule them at times, but for the most part, I'm just building consensus and going off. And I don't think that's an irresponsible way to manage the team either. Like, as long as you have the right people in place, and they have in a lot of ways, but... Like, for instance, a lot of the stuff people are complaining about that they did this offseason, I personally believe, like, nobody's told me this, but just my sense is, I think Jerry agrees with the fans on a lot of what they wanted him to do this offseason. I think he was being told by people that, well, we can't do it. And so he went, okay, well, that's the consensus I'm getting here, so I'm gonna defer to these people that I've put in power that have told me we can't do it.
Do you think they intentionally mislead him?
No.
I don't think it's
a good question.
I don't think it's that at all. I think it's, honestly, I think that they're questions about, do you understand the cap is a little like, I mean, it's not a little, it's a lot like economics,
mm-hmm.
where you can have several like completely different views on what the economy will do if you do X, Y, Z. Same sort of thing with the cap, where there's, I think, different views on if we do this, we're not going to be able to do this, or we're able to do this, and different people look at it and go, I don't believe that's true.
Yes.
And so I think that I think you've got people in place right now who misforecasted the cap.
Yeah, and I just wonder, like, you know, I wonder if, like, if they misled him in any way. Because I'm like, I know you, I'm sure you remember the story. Like, I remember when Steinbrenner was with the Yankees, like, he wanted to trade Bernie Williams. And I think, I don't remember who the GM was, but he didn't want to trade him.
George Costanza.
It was not Costanza. And he went back to George, and he said, so he went and he tried for 2 days. He goes, nobody wants him. So he was forced to keep him. But he just knew that he didn't want to trade him. And I just wonder, like, if Jerry says, hey, can we do this, this, this? And then someone's like, no.
What did he get George Steinbrenner in the mid-90s, early 90s? What did he get suspended for and was away from the team for 2 years?
It was
illegal where they said,
Dave Winfield,
you cannot be part of the organization for 2 years. You can still have ownership, but literally you cannot be part of the day-to-day.
Spying on Dave Winfield or something like that. Yeah.
They say that if that wouldn't have happened, there would have never been the 90s and early 2000s.
Because he would have interfered.
He would have traded Derek Jeter. He would have traded Bernie Williams. He would have traded Andy Pettitte. He would have traded Mariano Rivera. He would have traded the core that, I forget the guy who was the general manager at the time, but pretty much said, if that wouldn't have happened, he wouldn't have allowed our young guys to develop. He would have just traded them all for now players. And the best thing that happened for 2 years, we were able to develop a team at the minor league system, bring them up. And then by the time they were established, I didn't know he was trying to trade Bernie Williams, but they're like, it was a good for us that Derek Jeter got established in the major leagues, yeah, that he couldn't trade him because he wasn't allowed to be part of the organizational meeting.
He paid a gambler $40,000 to dig up dirt on Dave Winfield. And
how much money?
$40,000.
Oh. I mean, good.
That
good
was
day.
After
it's
Dave
good
Winfield.
Day for the gambler.
Whatever, Dave, dude. I could buy you off for way less than that.
Oh, yeah.
Was it Watson who was their general manager?
I don't know.
It may have been Gene Michael then.
Okay.
But Watson.
John Hart.
Not John Hart.
He was part of Cleveland.
Yeah.
He was building a winner there.
Hey, speaking
Robert
of baseball.
Robert Niederlander, and then it was Joe Malloy.
Okay.
Real quick, speaking of baseball, Mike, would you rather trade for Garrett Crochet or sign
Max Fried?
Max Fried has gone through the major arm injury.
So he's already done. He's already good. He's already got that out of the way.
That doesn't necessarily
work. Got that out of the way. That's right. Right? Mm-hmm. Right, Corey?
Yep.
He's got like 10 more years of that ligament.
Not necessarily.
That's a great question. Obviously, Garrett Crochet has the more dominant fastball. I feel like Max Fried is the better pitcher.
He has 2 years of control.
And Max Fried's a free agent. It'll be interesting if I kind of have this theory that teams are not going to go past 4 years now with pitchers. I could be totally
collusion.
Wrong.
Didn't we talk about that? I don't know if we mentioned on the air, but we talked about it on a break. Like, could you start seeing, because of all the arm injuries and things like that, are they going to get treated like running backs where it's like, use them up for 5 years and go?
I'm going to talk about Sasaki for Baseball Nuggets. The Rangers want him very bad. And I get it. I want him too. But you have to know when you get this guy and you're like, well, guess what? The great thing is he entered a player pool. He didn't enter free agency. You get to pay him league minimum his first 3 years. Now, I know that there'll be arbitration. Yeah. And they'll be like, let's buy him out of this and that.
So that comes out of international bonus pool money, right?
Yes, correct. And Kevin said yesterday they
have 6.4, 6.8, something like
which
that.
Which is more than average.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the Rangers have set themselves up for success.
So they could give him all that if they wanted to.
I think they could.
Yes. No, you can.
You'd forfeit Dominican players, Venezuelan players. Like, you would forfeit a lot of then your Latin America getting prospects. But I think I don't know this. I think the Rangers are willing to do it if they know they're getting Sasaki. But you do have to know this. In those 6 years where you're like, we're getting him really cheap, he's not going to pitch for a year and a half. You're only going to get him for 4.5 years.
Like,
he will blow out his arm in that 6 year
period.
So you're
period. Just, because like the history shows that pitchers get hurt anyway.
Paul Skeens is going to blow out his arm in the next 3 years.
Aww.
Like, I have to think that as an organization, I have to think that he didn't blow out his arm at LSU or at Air Force. He is probably going to blow out his arm in the next 3 years, which is just part of the deal with pitchers. And so, you know, that in this 5 more years, I have Paul Skeens with the Pittsburgh Pirates. I'm only going to get 3.5 years out of those 5 years.
I wonder with Skeens if he's different because he didn't really pitch, though, until like his last year at Air Force and his year at LSU, right? He wasn't a pitcher in high school, was he? I don't remember.
I mean, he was a pitcher catcher. I don't know his innings pitched. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can look up how many innings.
But it's not like he was a PO.
But I still think he throws 100, he's going to blow out his arm. That's
I'm trying to control your crosstalk by making sure Bobby shuts up.
Oh, no.
I didn't say anything.
I saw that.
What were you going to say?
If you're running an organization, would you not assume those things?
Yes,
I think you have.
If I have a guy in his young 20s.
I would.
Who is throwing 100, who's never had the Tommy John or elbow injury.
Hope for the best, plan for the worst, right?
Like, he's in 6 years throwing that hard in the way we teach kids and young men their workout routines. We're teaching them to throw 100, and we're teaching them to blow out. Those two things do go together.
Want to go around the room here. A couple of questions for you. First, start with you, Corey. How many is a few?
Three or more.
Three or more?
Agreed.
Yeah, because, yeah.
Unless a couple. Mark few.
Two. Yeah, a couple.
This is Mark few.
Yeah.
Because, boy, did you see what happened to his kid?
Oh, yeah.
Man, guy made tea.
Okay. I'm glad we got that confirmed. We had sent Peyton an email. We were like, hey, audio for tomorrow. Get a few cuts from the Mavs. And we showed up and we got two. And we're like, there's only two on here. And he's like,
couple.
Yeah. He said, you said a few.
And one of them was Daniel Jones, right?
And one was Daniel
that was another
Jones.
But Peyton is saying that a few is two.
Yeah.
Well, we only had one Mavs segment, so I mean, why would I grab three for one Mavs segment?
You know why?
Wow, we had two.
We had to change the structure.
No, you did it. I saw it.
We changed the structure.
I like the idea that you tore your run sheet apart. I was like, well, Peyton didn't get us more
we
Mavs.
Played, so we played one for crosstalk. We played another at 6:20. So, I mean.
That you're out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for tapping out.
Next question. We'll start with you, Kevin.
Okay.
Is it too early to put up Christmas decorations?
I don't think so.
Adrian wants to.
I just want to say.
Right. High five, Adrian.
Okay, if you don't want to do it, then don't do it. It does not offend me if I'm driving by and I see someone's got their Christmas lights up. I'm like, that's fine.
I feel like it dilutes the month of December, though. I feel like it just kind of, it was aware.
I guess when you're watching football the ads and commercials are starting to come out about their Christmas commercials.
They're not like, buy your turkeys now.
Yeah, every kiss begins with K is about to start. And then a big Lexus with a bow on it's about to start, you know?
You know, I don't think it dilutes December. I think it dilutes November.
Yeah, it dilutes
Thanksgiving. It just extends December.
Yeah. And I love Thanksgiving.
No, I love Christmas time. If I'm going to waste my, if I'm going to spend the time to put the decorations up, I want to get 2 months out of them.
Okay. I get that.
Hey, you guys can take a load off and relax.
Oh, love to do
here
that.
Here we go, guys.
Your show's over.
Yeah. It is.
Take a load off.
And is Sean, when is he going to get over the election?
He'll be back tomorrow.
Are you sure?
He's back tomorrow.
It took him 48 hours
He's over it.
Already knows he'll be back tomorrow, so
He was feeling a little bit better late yesterday. And it was like, I'm going to take the one more day, get over this illness, and then I'll be back.
So he could have come in today.
I don't think. I mean, maybe when he woke up, he probably could have been.
My kids are passing a virus around right
Everyone's passing a virus around now.
Oh.
Stop it.
Okay.
Started with Rico Dowdle.
It's coming up next to the fan.
On the road.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.